The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
We asked this question off the top of First Take today. And by the way, The Max Kellerman Show is not just like a version of First Take. However, there's going to be a lot of overlap with topics, especially since that's what I prepped on all day, right? I've been doing that since last night, really. So, and we do a very good job on First Take of either playing the hits or creating them. Where here's what's on our mind, and that can kind of like kick off a sports news cycle almost. Here's what's on my mind about the Cowboys. Why couldn't they win last night? Dak was good. Dak was at least a B+. Russell Wilson was an A+. Russell Wilson was just better. And it's not a not. The quarterback's not the problem in Dallas. Here's the problem in Dallas. Well, before I even tell you what the problem is, let me go over some Dallas Cowboys records. They're 1-2 this year. They were 8-8 last year. 9-7 the year before, 10-6. It's a 9-7 record over the last 3 years on average. But when you factor in the 1-2 this year, it's below 9-7. And then if you take the following 6 or 7 years, going back all the way to 2010, you know how many wins and losses they average? 8.5. 8.5 wins, 7.5 losses. So the Cowboys now, since 2010, and we're in 2020, the Cowboys are a tick above average. 8.5 win team, year in and year out. What does 8.5 wins really mean? It means you're either 8-8 or 9-7, thereabouts. Right? That's what they average. For every 9-7 year they have an 8-8 year. Now, tick above average is pretty good. Especially because Jerry Jones didn't get his team because he's some football genius. He got his team because he's rich. And who'd he put in charge? His son. His son didn't work his way to his position and get to be GM of the Cowboys because he's some football genius. He did it because he's Jerry Jones' kid. His daddy owns the team. This is not a knock against Stephen Jones. Let me tell you something. Stephen Jones is an above-average NFL executive, and that is a hard thing to be. I'm not clowning right now. I'm serious. He deserves a lot of credit. In the most competitive football league on earth, Stephen Jones, who, unlike a lot of other executives, had to grind and work his way to that position, his daddy owns the team. He just got his position. I know he put in work in football, but still. The reason he has his job is because daddy's the boss. Daddy is the owner. Very seldom does someone like that actually wind up very good at their jobs. And at their job. And Stephen Jones is good at his job. He's an above-average NFL executive. A tick above average. Since 2010, he's a tick above average. A half tick. 8.5 wins a year. Pretty good. Unlikely, by the way. It's unlikely that as a result of nepotism, the kid whose daddy owns the team winds up a tick above average. Because everyone else had to earn and grind and work their way to that position. It's impressive. Stephen Jones, and I'm not clowning, it's impressive. But let me ask you something. Does that sound like America's team to you? Is America okay with just being a tick above average? Well, nowadays, maybe we'll take it. But really, if you call yourself America's team, if you're supposed to be the most successful franchise, a tick above average ain't going to cut it. And why won't that change Jerry Jones's ego? There have been studies done on nepotism and how it affects businesses. And a lot of the time, it's negative effect, nepotism, meaning you favor family, like the family members get jobs. And the reason for that, a lot of people point to it decreases morale if people feel like they can't ever get to be the boss because the boss's kid gets the job. But there's more to it than that. When you've already pre-selected the person who's going to run the show because it's the boss, because the owner's kid, you have necessarily, therefore, eliminated any other candidate for the job. And the odds that the owner's kid is going to be the best in the world at doing that are slim. Again, Stephen Jones has done a tremendous job for the for the boss's kid to be as good as he is, which is a tick above NFL average, not easy. And he's done it. I'm not clowning. He deserves credit. But that's why the Cowboys are stuck. Because the owner of the team has his kid running the team rather than actually go get the best executive he can find. And because the two of them, and I suspect especially Jerry, go out and hire a coach that won't steal the thunder from Jerry. Jerry, very important for him to be thought of as, you know, he likes it when people call him coach, like he's a football guy. And he is a football guy. But what happened when Jimmy Johnson was coach, when Bill Parcells was in charge? It didn't really last very long because those guys got credit that they deserved. Jerry couldn't take it. He needs to be the guy who gets the credit. So when they hire a guy like Mike McCarthy, no one was banging down Mike McCarthy's door. Mike McCarthy was kind of in a desperate situation, and he had to do this whole PR campaign. Remember, like, this is a whisper campaign. This is how it works in the media. People start with, yeah, actually, he's really into stats nowadays. And then someone writes it up as a story, and then other people repeat it, and it gets amplified. And that's how you work the media. And as the media, most of us are useful idiots. Can be manipulated that way, and then we pass it along to you. And the whole narrative, is people can't say story anymore, it has to be narrative all the time. The whole narrative was, boy, Mike McCarthy did a lot of soul searching, and he found out that he had to acquaint himself with the latest in statistics and da-da-da-da-da and analytics, and now he understands he needs to go by the percentages more than just the old football orthodoxy, which is frequently wrong, and he packaged himself that way, and the Cowboys sold him to the fans as, you know, a guy who had won a Super Bowl, which is true. Like, you know, a lot of times a head coach is like just has organizational talent. He doesn't have to be some brilliant X's and O's guys. He has to have organizational talent. He has to be a leader of an organization. And they packaged Mike McCarthy that way, and a lot of people bit. What I said at the time was, okay, what this tells me, since it's Jerry Jones, is I don't think Jerry sees the end of the road yet. I think Jerry thinks he's going to outlive everyone. And so he's not desperate enough to win yet. Not desperate enough to put his ego aside. He still wants to do it his way. He wants to win his way. And only after it's clear to him that he can't win his way and that the clock is ticking, then at that point, maybe he'll put his ego aside and hire the right people. Not to say Mike McCarthy's incompetent or Stephen Jones is. Mike McCarthy is probably also a tick above average, even in today's NFL. And Stephen Jones is. But that's why you have a tick above average football team in Dallas. And every year when it looks like, oh my God, they're so talented. No, I can look at the talent and tell you they're better than average. Well, okay, but maybe some of it. I know that they do have legitimate talent in glamour positions a lot of the time. But maybe some of the reason that we feel the way we do about them and maybe overrate their talent a little bit is because they get a lot of press. You know, in boxing, this actually matters. If you're going to, like, even according to sanctioning body rules, ranked fighters, some of it depends on media exposure. Have they fought on TV? So, in other words, two fighters' resumes may be similar in terms of the quality of opponents, but one of them has been exposed to the public more. Can actually affect his ranking. And that happens psychologically in football. The Dallas Cowboys players are more exposed to you, you know them better, than players on other teams because they're the Dallas Cowboys. And that's okay with Jerry, right? As long as he's making money. As long as they're the center of attention or a center of attention, he's all right. Putting things ahead of winning. So they've done. I'm not going to sit here and act like the Cowboys haven't done a good job. They have. A tick above average over a 10-year period. They win 8.5 games and lose 7.5 games per 16 games over a 10-year period. And last night was no exception. Seattle's pass defense is awful. And Dak was doing his thing. But Russell did his thing a little better. And you could talk about the Dallas secondary as Keyshawn Johnson did, I'm sure, on the radio this morning, not to mention on First Take. But, all right, it's like, as I said about the Giants' offensive line, it's a leaky boat. This is what teams in the middle of the pack deal with. This is the NFL. always there's a, if you get stronger in one area, you get weaker in another because there's a salary cap. You have to rob Peter to pay Paul, and there are a lot of Peters to pay. So there are a lot of Pauls to rob. So you get better in one area, you get worse in another. And that's the Dallas Cowboys. They wanted to get stronger receiver, they're weaker in their secondary because they didn't address a need in the draft. That's how it is. They're a tick above average. They'll be a tick above average this year. They'll win, even if they're only an 8-8 team, they will, even if they're a 7-9 team, they're going to win the NFC East by default. That was Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Meantime, 888-SAY-ESPN. Meantime, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers. Everyone's quick to say Russell Wilson's the MVP so far, and I agree. He's definitely a fine candidate for MVP. Is he better than Aaron Rodgers so far this year? I don't think so. And let's see what Lamar Jackson does tonight. Patrick Mahomes, for that matter. Aaron Rodgers. See, here's the thing about what the Packers did in the offseason. They could have and should have probably drafted a receiver, right? Give Aaron Rodgers a first-round pick to throw to. He's gone more passes without throwing to a first-round pick than anyone in history by far. And when he finally did throw to a first-round pick, and I forgot who it was already a couple years ago, it was like some BS end of his career. So I forgot what it was, but it wasn't like, wow, they drafted that guy first in the first round, and he turned out to be a great receiver for the Packs. It's never that. And last night, he did it without Devontae Adams. So they didn't draft CeeDee Lamb or another receiver. Instead, what the Packers did was draft a quarterback to replace Aaron Rodgers. Boy, that was a stupid thing to do, right? Or was it? Or maybe. I'm not questioning Aaron Rodgers' internal motivation. To be an all-time great, you must be internally motivated. But like in Spinal Tap, this one goes to 11. Check out Spinal Tap if you've never seen it, kids. It's a mockumentary. This one goes to 11. Look, even the greatest of all time, they want bulletin board material. External motivation also helps them. Everyone from Michael Jordan to Derek Jeter to Kobe Bryant to whomever you want to mention, Tom Brady. Tom Brady's basically tweeting at me, showing pictures a couple years ago of the radar gun, 60-something miles an hour on the radar gun, and asking about a cliff. What does he care about what I say? Because it's a little extra external motivation. Well, Rodgers got his external motivation and then some when instead of after a 13-win season where a new head coach has turned him basically into a game manager and there are whispers that he's no longer elite and those whispers are actually, if they're not shouts, they're in solid inside voices. They may not be outside voices, but solid inside voices, right? Not so much whispers even. He's not elite anymore. They drafted Jordan Love in the first round instead of getting him a receiver, but they lit a fire under him. Now, is part of it explainable by the fact that new coach, new system, and now this season with great offensive line protection, by the way, so far, he's used to that coach and system. They've taken the handcuffs off a little bit, and now he's able not only to game manage them to a 13-3 record, by the way, with a playoff win against the Seattle Seahawks. But he's able to actually do Aaron Rodgers things again. Yes, I think that's part of the explanation. But don't you wonder if part of it is also the fact that he got a fire lit under him because they drafted his replacement and because they know the kind of guy that they have in Aaron Rodgers and because of what he went through with Brett Favre, I think he could have been relied upon not to ice Jordan Love out. Whatever he thought about it, he wasn't going to hold it against Jordan Love, right? And so you saw the social media stuff that was put out there over the summer where Aaron Rodgers was working with Jordan, like showing him a few things. So they drafted their quarterback when they didn't even need to, and he'll be tutored. He has under the tutelage of Aaron Rodgers for several years at least. And then they got Aaron Rodgers as motivated as possible in the second year of a system that bore fruit last year, 13 wins. Green Bay Packers are, I mean, my pick going into the season was Seattle to come out of the NFC, and I think I'm going to stay there for now. The Green Bay Packers, no one's better than them right now in the NFC. And no one, including Russell Wilson, I would rather have than Aaron Rodgers other than Mahomes. In the NFC, I'm taking Rodgers first. meantime, Drew Brees looked pretty good. Drew Brees, but, you know, like, game one against Tom Brady, he was better than Tom Brady. That wasn't saying a lot. He wasn't very good. Game two, he was bad. Week three, Drew Brees was good. Now, if you swapped quarterbacks and put Aaron Rodgers on the Saints and Drew Brees on the Packers, Saints win the game. And it's no knock against Drew Brees. But even in his prime, he wasn't as good as Aaron. Aaron Rodgers is just a different level talent. Sean Payton, Saints head coach, after the game.
You know, we're 1-2 right now. Been a while since we felt that, and yet 3 years ago we were 0-2. So, you know, a little bit of a gut check, and yet we're not playing well enough. You know, let's not fool ourselves. We're making too many mistakes, and we're not playing disciplined enough on both sides of the ball. And that's really just the truth.
And Sean Payton wasn't good enough yesterday. Let's be honest. He didn't have a great game as a coach. He brings in, what was the move? And I saw so much football yesterday. Taysom Hill, at a critical point, made some bad decisions. But really, the difference in the game was not coaching. Well, credit to LaFleur. The difference in the game was Aaron Rodgers can do things physically that in the history of football, the only other person I've ever seen who can consistently do what Aaron Rodgers does is Patrick Mahomes. Because they do all those miraculous things that like Brett Favre did, but they have better accuracy and they don't make the same mental errors. Right? They don't turn the ball over and they do all those incredible Brett Favre things. It's unbelievable how good Aaron Rodgers still is. And I said it before the season, and by the way, I'm guessing, of course, like everyone else, but I would take Mahomes 1 and Aaron Rodgers 2 in all the NFL. And Russell Wilson, you could argue, is better, but and he is great. He's an all-time great in his prime. But he's just physically, like, Rodgers can just do some things on some throws where you're like, who's as good as that? And the only answer is really Mahomes. Meantime, everyone's complaining about that PI, pass interference, that went against the Rams and cost them the game. It didn't cost them the game. The fact is, what we don't want is an incredible, miraculous comeback, you know, decided by, ultimately, the referees, right? But it was a bad call, I think. But I wouldn't say, oh my God, it's the worst call I've ever seen. You could see why it was called. Bad, especially given the leverage of the moment, a bad call. That didn't decide the game. Josh Allen threw 5 touchdown passes. By the way, didn't have his best game. Scored 5 touchdowns. 4 touchdowns and he rushed for a touchdown. But didn't have his greatest game. Still over 300 yards and 5 touchdowns. And a win against a very good Rams team. No, you can't say the PI is why they lost the game. A bad call, a curious call, given the leverage of the moment, cost the Rams the chance to have an epic comeback. That's different than costing a team the game. They fell into an enormous hole in the first half. And that's partly because Josh Allen, like, who are the MVPs of the NFL so far? Well, let's see what happens at tonight's game. Big game, Chiefs-Ravens. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. One of those guys, particularly if it's Lamar Jackson, the numbers he's put up in the first two games. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson's probably leading the pack, and Josh Allen's kind of right there. By the way, Ryan Clark and others have brought up the incredible stat on Lamar Jackson. In the regular season, Lamar Jackson is 21-1 against the rest of the NFL. 21-1. Against the rest of the NFL in the regular season. He's 0-2 against Patrick Mahomes. 21-1. People used to ask, is Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson going to be the best rivalry in sports? And I was like, I just don't see Lamar on Patrick Mahomes' level. When you start to look at the numbers he put up, even the passing numbers at an early age, Lamar Jackson was the most accurate age 21-year-old passer in the history of the NFL. Peyton Manning and everyone. Lamar Jackson was number one most accurate. Now, well, it's because he runs And given the threat of his run, that's setting up his passing. But if you fall behind, yeah. However you get there, you get there. And they got more accurate year two. And now in year three is more accurate than that. But the question with Lamar Jackson will be like, Patrick Mahomes can run, not like Lamar Jackson, who can, but he can run. But everything is set up by his passing ability. Lamar Jackson, it seems, is reverse. The threat of the run is setting up his passing. If they contain Lamar Jackson and he can set up the run with the pass, then yeah, we're looking at the best rivalry in sports for the foreseeable future. Who knows how long this could last, knock wood. I got to get into Carson Wentz in a little while. I mean, do you all see yet what I'm talking about? You see what I'm talking about? 888-SAY-ESPN. Raj, I'm getting to calls. Oh, yes. I'm going to get to calls.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Coach Spo on how this Heat team battled to the finals. That's the cue to play the Spoelstra sound.
Well, we have a lot of guys in our locker room that have been looked over, passed over, been told in some form or fashion that they're less than. This group loves to compete, and they're the anti-analytic, anti-AAU, anti-whatever. I don't know. They just want to compete. It might not play out in the statistics, but in between the four lines, they tend to find a way to get a win.
I don't know. It seems to play out in the statistics. Duncan Robinson's shooting percentage from three is through the roof. Tyler Hero is putting up a lot of numbers efficiently. Jimmy Butler's an all-star player by the stats every year. Goran Dragic is a very good player and has been for years and years. Bam Adebayo, as Kendrick Perkins says, is one of the best bigs in the game. And that can be borne out statistically. I don't know. I think the analytics are just a tool. Like the Heat, just like reality likes the Heat. Spoelstra's a great coach. He has a very good team. And they have earned their finals trip through, by the way, an improved Eastern Conference. Yes, Gordon Hayward missed the first two games with injury for the Celtics. But when really crunch time came, when those high leverage moments came, the Heat outplayed the Celtics throughout the series. And they deserve it and are deserving finalists. And by the way, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics. No, the Nets didn't have Kyrie and KD this year, but the East has come way up in the world, and here are the Miami Heat, set up not only now, but going forward, given Tyler Hero's 20 years old, and Bam is young, and they're both great. Pat Riley knows how to run an organization, and Spoelstra knows how to coach a team. The Heat are set up love. Celtics, too, you know, I wonder, does Danny Ainge have a problem? Brian Cashman was this way with the Yankees for years. Whenever he needed to really part with real resources in order to bring in an ace at the top of the rotation, like, it's one thing to try to get a deal on a good number two pitcher, but a bona fide shutdown ace is going to cost you in resources. Resources meaning either in treasure, right? Money, salary cap issues, stuff, right? In the Yankees case, not salary cap, but, you know, luxury tax issues, or in prospects. And people don't use, like, GMs, a lot of times they get cold feet. I don't know if I want to spend all that. Maybe it's the same with Danny Ainge. He hasn't, when all these players have been dealt, like, think of all the player movement in recent years. LeBron, Kawhi, KD, like, just name a player. But the Celtics never go in for the, this guy's going to put us over the top. I don't mean like a guy like Kyrie Irving. I mean a guy like LeBron. Well, of course, if you have LeBron, yeah, okay, but LeBron and KD and Kawhi all change teams. Can Jason Tatum be the best player on a championship team eventually? I think so. But the Celtics are going to have to wait another year to see if they can win a championship. The Heat outplayed them. I no longer believe had the Celtics had Gordon Hayward for the first two games that they would have won this series. Maybe extended it to six, maybe even seven games. But I think the Heat, in the moment of truth, were going to beat the Celtics. Bam Adebayo was making moves with 32 points, 14 rebounds. He was the first Heat player with at least 30 points and 10 rebounds in a playoff game since LeBron James in 2014.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I'm going to talk about LeBron in a second. Well, I'm going to talk about LeBron right now. A lot of football calls. While we're on the NBA, I want to finish these thoughts. LeBron James is the second greatest player who ever lived. He's passed Kareem as an NBA player. Of course, Kareem was the most dominant college player of all time and spent a bunch of years in college that LeBron got to be in the pros for. So it's a little deceptive to say LeBron, this deep into his NBA career, no one's ever been this good, including Kareem, because Kareem played 4 years in college where he was better than anyone who ever lived in college, right? So it's LeBron and Kareem going back and forth to see who's behind Jordan. But as a purely NBA player, LeBron now has an even better resume than Kareem. Kareem's got the 6 chips. But LeBron, to make it to the finals every year, well, what if he was in the Western Conference? You know, the Nuggets made a real run, a scary run at the Lakers. And LeBron said, nope, I'm taking over. Guarded the toughest guy to guard, did everything on offense, won the game, and proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's the best player in the game and that I was wrong to say Kawhi was better than him. Just as I was wrong to say Giannis was better than him several years ago during the regular season. Just as I was wrong to say in 2016, Steph was better than him. LeBron erased that in the playoffs. Now think about what LeBron James has done. Here are the contenders to his throne once he became indisputably the best player in the game, right? Because was LeBron or Kobe? Kobe was getting long in the tooth. LeBron was great. Who was the best? But then when it came to it, LeBron choked against Dallas, something Kobe wouldn't have done, right? And so it was, I thought, no, LeBron's already better than Kobe. Then when I saw it, I was like, sorry. I literally apologized to Kobe. He and I used to talk a bunch when I was in LA. I'd be like, sorry about that. And he laughed, you know? But by the next season, LeBron was winning championships and playing huge under pressure. And Kobe had gotten a little older. And by then, it was clear, okay, now LeBron's the best player in the world. And then 4 or 5 years go by, and then here comes KD, and he wins an MVP. And you go, wait a minute. LeBron's in his prime. Why is someone else winning MVP and deserving it? See, Jordan, other dudes would win MVP, but it's like, okay, Charles Barkley or whoever, Karl Malone, you ain't Jordan. Everyone knew Jordan was better. But watching KD is like, wait a minute, LeBron, he really, like, Barkley and Malone didn't deserve those MVPs. Jordan was better than them. But LeBron, KD just outplayed you in the regular season. Then came the playoffs, and it's like, got it, LeBron, you're better than KD. Then came Steph, 73 wins, MVP. Whoa, the way the rules of the game are played, the distance from which he shoots, he's just the best. In any other era, LeBron would be better. But in this one, Steph is better, I said on Sports Nation in 2016. Then the playoffs came, and by the end of the playoffs, sorry, LeBron, you're still the best in the world. Then Giannis a couple years ago, look at this regular season. This dude's almost 7 feet tall, handling, passing, yamming it on everyone. Shaq says, that's the only guy who came around since me who I could say that's Superman. Then the playoffs came around. Whoops, sorry, LeBron, he's not better than you. And now this year, Kawhi, because last year Kawhi beat Giannis and everybody else, and he was the MVP. And considering the defense he played on LeBron when he was only 22, and the fact that he just won MVP and one of the greatest all-time finals ever, postseasons ever, and LeBron was old and was hurt and didn't make the playoffs, Kawhi's the best player in the world. And then the playoffs rolled around this year. Whoops, sorry, LeBron. That's 4 title defenses as best player in the world against KD, Steph, Giannis, and Kawhi. LeBron still sitting on top. Well, so he's the greatest of all time. Calm down, kids. Jordan's peak was higher than LeBron's. Jordan had a 10-year prime, was 9-time all-first-team defense, playing 82 games a year, 40 minutes a game. Every single time he had a single other all-star, he won the finals in under 7 games. Except for the first year he had an all-star, which was Scottie Pippen. He took the defending champ Pistons 7 games, lost because Pippen had a migraine, scored 2 points in 40 minutes, meaning Jordan was once again without an all-star. Whenever he had a single other all-star opponent, he always won the finals in under 7 games. He also had the highest scoring average of all time, highest PER, like efficiency rating, of all time, and every year of his prime except for one, was an all-NBA first-team defender. retire the prize. Jordan's the greatest of all time. LeBron is right next to him. It's Jordan 1, LeBron 2. The Max Kellerman Show is brought to you by Shell V Power Nitro plus premium gasoline. The Eagles need to make a tough decision. I'll tell you next on No Doubt.
Max, the podcast.
Going to get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No doubt.
All right, Max, you teased it for the Boys and Girls of America. Now let's talk about it. It's time for the Eagles to bench Wentz.
Nah, son.
Oh, you got something else in mind?
I will tell you this. Jalen Hurts has to show it in practice. I don't know that he is. If Jalen Hurts is showing it in practice, then the answer is yes. But this is a rookie who was going to be a bit of a project. So it really depends on what Hurts is showing. Because once you bench Wentz, that's a big thing to do. I actually think the following. I'm going to pause from telling you no doubt or nah, son, for this. Carson Wentz has an untradeable contract. He's statistically the worst starting quarterback in football right now. Now, of course, I noticed this last year. Second half of last year, when he was being lauded as an MVP candidate, I was telling everyone he stinks. Making bad decisions, bad execution. He'd follow up on, oh my God, did you see that throw with two bad throws and a bad idea, right? So if he has an untradeable contract, what do you do? That's why they drafted a quarterback in the second round. They could have packaged that pick and traded up and gotten CeeDee Lamb, but they didn't. Because they didn't believe in Carson Wentz long term. Well, it's because he's hurt. No, if he's injury prone, you can go get a backup quarterback that can hold it down. No, they didn't believe in him. They wanted to draft his potential successor. So if he has an untradeable contract, what do you do? When did he have his success? 2016-17, when he was MVP of the league in 2016 till he got hurt.
I'm going to go to Nagy here.
Who was that with? Who was it with? Frank Reich. Where is Frank Reich? In Indianapolis. If Philip Rivers, who's playing well right now, but given his age, if he falls apart or if something bad happens, knock wood, before the trade deadline, I'll bet you the Colts would trade for him, take him off the Eagles' hands, and that might be the one place he can be good. So that's my idea. Go ahead, Roger.
All right, quickly, you know, we don't have time to listen to that yet. I was going to do it, but Mitch Trubisky has started his last game for the Bears.
No doubt.
No doubt.
Mitch Trubisky isn't good. He wasn't good when they drafted him. And it's hard to tell with these athletic quarterbacks. Like Mitch Trubisky, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Who was going to wind up good and bad among those guys? It was hard to tell. The answer is Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Mitch Trubisky is not very good. He's fast. He can outrun linebackers. That's about the best thing you can say about him. Nick Foles, whenever he's had the right coach, has been excellent. Chip Kelly, 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. No good with Jeff Fisher. Of course. No good in a bad organization in Jacksonville. Great with the Eagles, where he played him into the playoffs and then beat the Bears and almost the Saints after winning the Super Bowl. Nick Foles is the Bears quarterback. The better off for it. Cowboys, really America's team?